All right, we're fresh back from the Australian Powerlifting Union National Championships this week. What a weekend it was last week. We had to stretch it out over 4 days because we had, I mean, it was just an amazing weekend. Well, amazing, really, 4 days. We had originally 30 lifters from Adonis scheduled to go. Unfortunately, two dropped out due to work and injury. So we still ended up with 28 over there. Of those 28, 11 returned home with medals, and the only reason why it wasn't more than 11 was because in a couple of the weight divisions, we had more than three Adonis athletes lifting in that weight class. For example, in the 93 kilo division, I think we had like at least five or six males in the open competing in that division. So obviously, there's only three medals to go around, and so it just becomes a case of fighting for the top three spots. First of all, a huge thank you to the Ritchie brothers at Ritchie's Gym. They had one of the best, actually, they had the best setup I've ever seen of any national championship. It was on par with the world championship setups that I've been to over the years. You know, international level events such as the World Championships and the Arnold Sports Festival, things like that. Just a fantastic space, enough equipment to go around, enough plates to go around, partitioned nicely. I mean, the live feed was amazing. Just everything, top to bottom. The commentary, everything was good. We really enjoyed ourselves. As lifters, it's important to be for an important competition, you want to be somewhere where you feel comfortable, you know, where it's not too hot, it's not too cold, you've got equipment, you're not rushing, you know, there's not too many people sharing just the one sort of, the one platform or the one squat rack, anything like that, you know, or not too many people, not enough plates to go around for people. Things like that is important for like high-level competitions, such as like national championships, world championships, stuff like that. So they did a fantastic job. Thank you to all the spotters, the loaders, the volunteers, the referees. I mean, it all ran fantastic. Well done to the APU for putting on such a fantastic national championships. During my time there, during that whole time, you know, I was coaching pretty much from the get-go. I was coaching Thursday, Friday was a huge day of coaching. Saturday I coached this one, then Sunday I competed myself. I picked up on a few things that sort of reflections back on the national championships where people go wrong, you know, coaches and athletes. And I'm talking about across the board, nobody in particular. I'm talking about, you know, our own coaches, our own athletes, as well as other coaches, observations from other coaches and other athletes that are simple and common. There are things that mistakes we all make, and it's a good thing to make those mistakes, to be able to learn from them and take away. And that's part of what the reason for this episode is to be able to do my part in bringing to the foreground some of that information, so that whoever's listening now, maybe a future coach, an upcoming coach, an upcoming athlete or a competitor, we can listen to this and also make some benefit out of this. So the first thing is, one of the main things I noticed is the absolute need to train exactly the way you're going to compete. The more you can stimulate, the more you can replicate competition scenarios and situations in your training, the better you're going to do, especially as those competitions become higher and higher level. If you're somebody who's relatively inexperienced and you're going into your first nationals and you haven't really been training in as many ways as possible in your training in the lead up to nationals, there are things, more and more things are going to stress you out, more and more things are going to throw you off. And that is everything you can think of from top to bottom. I'm talking about, if you're deadlifting and your knees are soft in your deadlifts and, you know, you look back on your, say, recorded footage and you're either not seeing it or you're seeing it and you're not really paying attention to it because you think, I'll be all right on the day. It's just a couple of extra inches, right? I just have to lock my knees out at the top. I just have to squeeze my quads and I'll be fine. No, you won't be fine, because obviously multiple people at every competition, at any competition, are missing simple cues, are missing simple details that they very easily could be or should be not missing. And it could have made the difference between a medal and not a medal, between first and second place, second and third place, whatever. So you have to be really honest with yourself in regards to how you're really executing things when you're training, and getting that honest feedback from somebody else. It may not even it doesn't even have to be a coach. You could be training with friends around at a particular time. Those friends need to be able to give you some really honest feedback as to how that technique is. Should you maybe lock out more? You know, if you're picking a squat and you're standing back, are your knees soft to begin with repeatedly? Are you leaning forward too much? Those should be pointed out. Now, if those things get pointed out to you during training and you're still not getting them done, you're still not taking an effort to fix it because you think you'll be fine on the day, well, then that comes down purely to you, right? That's your responsibility. It's on your neck. That's something you have to deal with and you have to live with if it does mean the difference between a significantly different result, you know? So you've got to train how you want to compete. And that even goes so far as your rest periods between sets, you know? In local level competition, competitions often tend to be a little bit slower, a little bit more relaxed. That's the nature of them. But as soon as you start getting to like state level championships, national level championships especially, and certainly world championships or international level events, the speed at which things move is drastically faster for a wide range of reasons. Typically, just the organization of the meet is just better. So the spotters and loaders are on the ball more. There are people helping them out. There's just things going on real fast. And if you're in training and you're doing a set, then you're taking 15 minutes, 20 minutes to have a chat and sort of cool down a little bit. And more importantly, to mentally sort of calm down a little bit, switch off a little bit, derail a little bit. Then going back and doing your next set again, that habit is a very bad habit that can really show up when it comes time for you to perform at your best on a big stage. Especially on a big stage where now you got 1, 2, maybe 3 others who are on par with you, who are close to you, who have a very good chance of taking you out. Now your stress levels go up, because you're not used to that. You're not used to, first of all, having only 5 minutes rest between your attempts, because it's a fast flight, or, you know, 6 or 7 minutes between your attempts. But you're also now not used to somebody else chasing you down. You're used to a relaxed environment. But by definition in competition, you're in a stressed out environment. It's competition. You're in a competitive environment. That in itself brings out some stress. Now, what you also don't realize is that little things inside the competition, that are any little thing that is outside of your comfort zone, outside of normality, outside of you being familiar with, any little thing like that, it adds a little bit more to your stress bucket. And the more stressed you get, the more of a stress response your body starts to basically release, right? More of a stress response you start to have within your body. A stress response is not a good thing, or an excessive amount of it is not a good thing, you know, because it's akin to a leaking tap. A stress response by nature releases and starts to tap into your energy. And you only have a finite amount of it, obviously, for the day. So if all of a sudden you're used to 15-minute rest breaks, pretty chill at the gym, and now you're having 7 minutes and you got to go again for that near max attempt, that is one thing that's going to start eating into your energy reserves. Now, on top of that, you got maybe a crowd in front of you and you're not used to that. That also starts to eat a little bit into your energy reserves. Now, you all of a sudden maybe feel like the bench is a little bit slippery, and that stresses you out a little bit. That throws you off mentally a little bit because you are used to having your bands around the bench at the gym, which makes it a super high friction surface where you just get stuck to the bench, and your bench obviously feels fantastic. You know, I'm talking about how people loop stretch bands around the ends of the bench press at the gym so that the shirt sticks to the bench a little bit better. Well, obviously that's going to feel much better, right, when you sit up in the bench press. But you didn't think that maybe I should prepare for the worst case scenario, not the best case scenario. Because how often do you get on a bench in competition and feel like you're absolutely stuck to the bench? And how often do you get on the bench and feel like it's either just normal, not really super sticky, or worse yet, it's a little bit slippery? But you haven't prepared for that. You've just been preparing for the best case. In fact, you've been altering the state of your training, the equipment of your training, to suit what you want it to suit, right? That's going to make a difference as well. Any of these little things that you haven't prepared yourself for, anything where in the gym you've just been taking it easy, or you've been cutting a corner to try and make things feel better for yourself, is going to take away from your performance on the day. It's going to eat into your energy reserves on the day. And eventually, when you get to, you know, maybe for the first, second, or third squat, it won't affect you much. Maybe you're somebody who can keep it together a little bit, you know, and you get through that. By the time deadlifts come around, all of that stress is sort of building up now, you know. Maybe you've been training with your body weight a little bit too high than it should be, and now you're starting to feel it because you had to cut 3-4 kilos. Too close to competition, and now you feel like you're cramping a little bit, and you're not used to that. That is, all of these things, they, at the time, when you're training in the gym, when you're training for that competition, doesn't seem like, oh, that's no big deal, I just have to do a weight cut. Oh, that's no big deal, I'll just, when it's time for competition, I'll just be resting a couple of minutes shorter. Oh, that's no big deal. When it comes time for competition, I'll just put more chalk on my back and I'll be fine on the bench. But you don't realize that all of those things happen simultaneously. It's not just one of those things. You want to do everything in your power to eliminate as much of those factors as possible. Totally get rid of them. So that instead of 10 things changing that you're unfamiliar with, only a couple of things that you're unfamiliar with changes. Or comes about, you know. Obviously, you're not going to be able to completely eliminate everything that stresses you out or you're unfamiliar with, because just you know, by nature and definition, it's a competition. So there's going to be, for example, crowds there, lights there. You know, it's a different feel, a different atmosphere. There's other competitors there. That's going to be harder to emulate in training. It's just something you get used to, you get better at dealing with when you do more and more and more competition over the years. And just some people are just naturally better at dealing with stressful situations like that. Maybe they're naturally more competitive, for example, you know, they thrive in a competition environment. And so that's fine, right? But no matter what, you want to give yourself the absolute highest chances of winning here. The absolute highest chances of, at the very least, doing your best, not even winning, doing your best, coming out with PBs, coming out with a good experience, with a good taste in your mouth, not a bad one. And if you are taking it easy in training, if you are not training the way you can be emulating competition, but you're not doing it, at the end of the day, anything in competition that you fall short of, you have to be able to relate back to that and see what you can change for the better the next time you're going to go into competition, so that it doesn't affect you as much. So make sure that your technique is right in training. Your rest periods are right in training. Make sure your body weight is correct, is at the right range. Does that mean you have to be exactly at your body weight when you are during your strength development blocks or whatever training into a competition? No, not necessarily. But you have to be within a certain range where all you really have to do is cut out a bit of food, cut out a bit of water in the couple of days leading into competition, or in a day or so leading into the competition, and you're basically good to go. You don't need to be doing any crazy saunas, any crazy dietary deficits, or really drastic water cuts or anything like that. You ideally don't want to be doing things like that, because the more extreme you go into measures, the more stress you put your body under physiologically and also psychologically, right? So that's something that is important that you should definitely keep a track of and be mindful of when you're doing your training. The other thing is your group of people who you train with and the environment that you train in. This one's more specifically probably for those of you listening who have a coach, who get programming from a coach. If you get programming from a coach and you are training around friends, I mean, that's cool, right? It's motivating. It's a good environment to train around friends and have people who are like-minded, who want to see you do better, to push you. But I think there's a fine line, and there's a danger when somebody gets coaching and they train around friends away from that coach, maybe because they haven't like an online coach, for example. And naturally, they are training around other people who are also keen and highly enthusiastic for powerlifting and powerlifting development and getting stronger. So it is very common and almost expected that these friends are going to say, "Hey man, what kind of program are you running? Let's have a look at your program. What do you got to do today?" And from there is when it starts, where maybe they'll say, "Oh, you're doing 5 sets? No, I think by now at this point of the competition, you should be doing only 2 sets. Oh, you're doing your reps at 85%? Oh, I think you really should be doing it at 92%. Because that's what my coach told me, and so on and so on. So you see where I'm going with this, right? Too many chefs spoil the broth. And the issue here is that they don't know and don't understand the context of your program. So if you're going to be training around people and you're getting coaching from somebody, and the coach is, especially if the coach is not there, because say it's an online coach or something like that, please make sure that whatever the coach is actually giving you, you execute on what's been given to you, so that you can maximize your progress, your program, the best that you can do on the day. If you've chosen a coach, chances are you've done your research and you're confident in this coach's ability, because this coach has gotten other people to the same place, right? To wins, to PBs, to medals, and so on. So, I mean, naturally, anybody who chooses a coach has done their research. They're picking a coach because of that coach's reputation to deliver results. So if the coach can deliver results and you're given your trust in the coach, then it would be unfair to you and also to the coach to step away from that. Because the coach takes time and understands the context of your physiology and also your psychology in how you respond to training, how you respond to stress, how quickly you recover,
maybe all of that information has been put into the taper. So knowing how quickly you recover, how quickly you have a time to peak, for example, this coach has decided to be at a certain intensity, at a certain percentage or a certain RPE, a certain number of days or weeks out from competition. Now, if you're around others who influence that, whether directly or indirectly, that can be bad. Now, let me explain what I mean by indirectly. Because directly is very self-explanatory, right? Like, directly is just basically someone blatantly telling you, oh, that thing on your program that I see with my eyes right now is wrong. You need to be doing this many sets and this many reps at this type of intensity, because that's how I do it, or that's what I saw on YouTube, or that's what I read on this particular blog. Okay, so that's directly. Sometimes people have good intentions. I mean, the same way as the directly, where people have good intentions, indirectly people also may have good intentions, and they influence your intensity in the following way. You get down, it's time for you to deadlift, you're training with four friends, and you're coming into a comp peak. And during these next 3, 4, 5 weeks leading into competition, you're going to be training regularly with these friends of yours who want nothing but the best for you. So they're going to tell you, they're going to psych you up every single session that you do for your squat, for your bench, for your deadlift, even for your accessories maybe, because it's all about going hard or going home, right? Meanwhile, the coach has... Okay, sorry, we had a bit of a technical difficulty there. So as I was saying... You have somebody who's training with their friends, and their friends are going to be psyching them up, are going to be getting into them to try and get the best out of that that person's training, because they know that they're going into a competition. Meanwhile, this person's coach has written a program for them, given a, for example, an RPE. Let's just even pick a higher RPE, right? Let's just say this person's coach wants them to work up to a single at an 8.5, maybe 9 RPE. But this coach has instructed this person to do these sessions, or at least this coach has an understanding that normally this person does their sessions in a relatively calm state, calm but focused state. Now, a single at an 8.5 RPE in a calm yet focused state is hugely different to a single at 8.5 RPE when you are being psyched up, when you are in an environment where, especially if you're somebody who thrives in an environment where when you are psyched up, when there's people watching, for example, when there's people cheering for you, you know, that weight is gonna move faster. And it's not going to be an 8.5, it's going to be a 7.5 or a 7, and you're going to put more weight on. And for maybe one session, that doesn't matter. But when you're training with that group of people in the last 4, 5 weeks leading into a competition, and they're doing that for you every big session where you have a big squat or a big bench or a big deadlift, that starts to accumulate in regards to the effects it will have on your peak potentially, on your recovery potentially. So if you are getting coaching and you've put your trust in your coach, then you also have to have the discipline to make sure you execute the program as per the coach's recommendation. If you're unsure of something, you have to let the coach know. I mean, just by the simple act of taking a video of your set and sending it to the coach can see very easily, well, you know, you're in an environment that is maybe too amped up, too psyched up, too hyped up. And that's not going to be very beneficial for what we're trying to do here. And the coach will be able to pull you back in that regard. But sometimes people don't send videos as regularly as they're supposed to, and the coach can easily miss this. And it's not the coach's fault. it can become the person's fault, whether directly again or indirectly, as I was saying. So that's another factor that you need to really keep in mind. If you've got a coach that's doing your programming, let the coach do the programming. Don't let others interfere. Don't let others butt in. Don't let others influence that particular program, because that program has been written with a particular context in mind of that particular athlete. The coach has hopefully gathered some information about how this person peaks, how this person's how fast this person recovers, and a whole bunch of other things that are easily overlooked. On the surface, it just looks like, well, my coach has just given me 5 sets of 3 or whatever. And the deeper meaning can be lost easily. The final takeaway point, the final, I guess, important takeaway point is the demeanor of the coach. Now, I firmly believe that if you're coaching somebody anywhere in anything, if you're the leader in something, if somebody's following your lead in something, your demeanor, your attitude, your energy is easily transferred onto the person who you are leading. If you are a coach who is unsure of the attempts you're picking, who has the body language that is down, that is not excited, you know, not energetic, that's going to rub off on your athlete for sure, especially the more of a beginner that athlete is. Imagine you have an athlete who's first local competition you go into, and you have a coach who's unsure of attempt selection, who's unsure of the feedback, what type of feedback to give to this athlete. Even if the athlete's maybe first squat wasn't all that great, right? There's a certain way for a coach to be able to communicate that, to still inspire confidence. And that's important. And as again, I think it's something that can be definitely developed over time by coaches. Some coaches are maybe a little bit more natural at it because they are more natural people's persons, or maybe they've had maybe jobs or experiences in the past where they've dealt with people on a very regular basis, and so they know their way around people and how to talk to people, how to communicate certain things in the correct way. So it's not misconstrued negatively or puts anybody down, you know. The demeanor of the coach is something that's very important for the athlete. The athlete will always look to the coach for more confidence and more reassurance. And so as the coach, you have to always be able to communicate what's happening, what's good, what could be improved on, you know. And you have to be confident and decisive in attempts that you pick, and justifying the reasons why you pick that attempt, and being able to just continuously inspire more confidence in that person, no matter how bad things are going. That's very important. That's an important skill to be able to have as a coach. It makes things much more enjoyable for the person, especially if it's one of the earlier competitions, especially if it's somebody who's naturally just more sort of neurotic, somebody who gets nervous more naturally, who you know, tends to lose their marbles a little bit more easily. People like that need a more constant reassurance typically, and a coach who can do that, a coach who's good at doing that, it can be very valuable for that person's long-term approach, because as time goes on, probably that person will begin to, no matter how nervous they are to begin with as lifters, as time goes on, they start to develop confidence, momentum in their abilities, and they're able to sort of pull themselves out of a bad situation, even by themselves, even if they don't really have a coach around, you know, they can start to gain confidence in their ability to be able to turn a bad day around or a bad lift around. But at an international level competition, at an important competition, or at a competition where a lifter is much more of a beginner, I think it's important that the coach that's accompanying the athlete, or the handler that's accompanying the athlete, is somebody who inspires confidence, who is themselves, you know, not nervous. You want a coach who's always looks like he's in charge, or she's in charge. He or she knows the next step, what we're going to do next. This is how it's going to plan out, you know. this is what I want you to do, and you do that, and it's going to happen, you know. And this is an important skill, I think, to be able to develop as well. So those are some of the just some of the main takeaway points that I had from the competition on the weekend. All of them, I think, even points that we can apply back into our own training with our own athletes and our own coaches at Adonis Athletics to make our future results even better than what we had. So, yeah, I think that's it. Leave it there for now. Let us know what you think of the above points and if any of them resonate with you.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.